Steel Tread by Andy Clark. Read by Remy Milner. Produced by Rich Stevenson. Prologue. Hedaya Etzel gritted her teeth behind her rebreather mask as smoke and heat haze danced about her. Gunfire poured down on her tank from the walls of the ravine, bullets rattling against the hull like driven hail. Fear and panic fought to master her, but Etzel thrust them to the back of her mind. She had her duties. Death would have to wait. "The Emperor protects," she told herself, then bit back the yelp as Oathkeeper rang like a struck bell. The Lehman Russ tilted with the force of impact before settling back on the steel coils of its suspension. "Damage report." Commander Mazenwe's voice was calm, projected over the vox from his bucket seat above and behind Etzel's gunnery station, as little more than a static-laced whisper through her headset. "Keep your mind on what's before you." It had been a favourite saying of her mother's, one of many Etzel still heard as clearly as though the woman stood behind her. Normally the sensation of connection made her feel by turns comforted or forlorn. Here, now, it brought the creeping sensation that her mother's shade lurked close by. The idea was incongruous, a nonsense, yet it sank its teeth in and it wouldn't let go. Etzel felt the icy touch of imagined breath upon her nape, and pictured her mother waiting to welcome her through the veil. The hair rose on Etzel's neck, and her skin prickled. She shook her head and spat a curse into the plastic muzzle of her rebreather. "Thrown alive, pull yourself together," she breathed.
"Vesco, damage report?"
Commander Mazenwe repeated. This time his words came to Etzel more clearly. She shot a glance through the smoke and firelight to where Yevon Vesco occupied the driver's station. Like her, the big man sat on a fold-out seat of plasteel and flak foam. Sweat slicked his bald pate. Drops had gathered in his eyebrows, and Etzel watched them clinging to hair, defying gravity.
"Hit to right flank armor, directed explosive. But she's holding, sir," said Vesco.
She saw his jaw move behind his rebreather as his mouth formed the words, but with the tank's power plant roaring and enemy fire hammering the hull, she heard them only through the vox headset clamped over her ears.
"Oathkeeper wouldn't let us down," Mazenwe replied. "Maintain combat speed and stay close on Commander Lethwen's tail. Only 200 yards to the end of the canyon. Then we'll make the Emperor proud."
Mazenwe's calm did not reassure Etzel. Heat washed over her, as though she stood too near an open furnace door. Smoke coiled about her, alarmingly thick and dark. She could taste it, overpowering her mask, worming in. Etzel's chest hitched, and she stifled a coughing fit. Their loader, Osk, was supposed to be extinguishing the fire in the bowels of the tank, but he hadn't spoken for what felt like hours. Etzel wanted to look back and check on him. Fear of what might meet her eyes held her rigid at her station. "Today is the day we die." The thought startled Etzel. It felt alien, an intrusion. She screwed her eyes tight shut and felt sweat trickle over her scrunched up lids. She grubbed it away with the back of one fist, then opened them again on firelight and smoke. The tank shuddered as it bowled along the canyon's rubble-strewn floor. Etzel had to look back, to see what had become of Osk, to check whether the fire was about to ignite her tank suit or touch off their shell magazine. She didn't. Couldn't.
"Etzel, target 120 yards ahead, 50 degrees right, elevation 20 degrees, confirm?"
Mazenwe's voice broke her paralysis. Etzel applied herself to her instruments, checking Oathkeeper's glowing Auspex screen, then pressing her eyes to the rubberized viewing scope. The tank jolted, mashing her face hard against the hot metal and Plaztec. She hissed with pain.
Eyes watering, she tried to focus on the juddering blur before her. She caught snatches of dark ferrocrete rushing past to either side, canyon walls studded with the dark hollows of windows like eyes. Watercolour smudges of green showed where Croatoa's verdant undergrowth was reclaiming the ruins. Above the ravine was a strip of open sky turned bruised purple and umber by twilight. All around were the enemy, too many to count, too swift to focus on. Etzel made out humanoid silhouettes. Their outlines were distorted. Spurs and deformations rendered them nightmarish. Her one fixed point was Commander Lethwan's tank, Restitution in blood, just ahead of them. Unlike Oathkeeper, Restitution had side sponsons. The terrain was so close they struck sparks from outthrust chunks of rubble as the tank charged for the canyon's end.
"Gunnery, Sergeant Etzel, do you have the target?"
snapped Mzenwe. She blinked, gasped, tried again. Still, she couldn't focus. The harder Etzel tried, the more sluggish her thoughts became.
Commander, I don't.
Restitution in blood transformed from a speeding tank to an expanding fireball. Vesco yelled through the vox and tried to rein Oathkeeper in. Lehman Russ battle tanks might not be the fastest vehicles, but they could stop quickly and were almost balletic when manoeuvring. Yet in his eagerness to escape the trap, Vesco had left too narrow a gap, and the collision came regardless. Etzel's head hit metal. She sprawled between her seat and Vesco's, fire heat raking her flesh. Then came a violent cacophony, rapid metallic clangs, the wasp whine of ricochets, a sound like tenderizers thudding against meat in her father's abattoir back in Sago. Something hot and wet splashed her face. Etzel felt boneless, weak as a fever victim. She tried to stand. She pressed her palms to the hot metal of the deck and sought to push herself upright, but could not. Etzel slumped and turned to see Osk's limp form sprawled amidst the flames filling Oathkeeper's belly. Fire danced gleefully over his corpse. Etzel dragged her eyes away. Beside her, Vesco leant against a stowage box. His gaze was unfocused. Blood drizzled from a cut on his scalp. Etzel forced her head up, feeling as though she were deep underwater. And truly, she realized, her face was wet, but the liquid felt too warm to be the ocean. Commander Mzenwe was slumped in his chair, limbs dangling like a doll's, blood running in rivulets down his arms and drizzling onto Etzel from his crooked fingers. The turret was a ragged mess of bullet holes, so was her commander. A detached part of Etzel's mind noted that it would have taken an autocannon, or something even heavier, to inflict that sort of damage on a Lehman Russ. She pictured hordes of mutants closing in around Oathkeeper, preparing to peel the machine open and drag her and Vesco out like morsels of meat scooped from a ruptured shellfish.
"We have to get out of here," she croaked.
Realizing her mistake, she activated her vox mic.
"Vesco, we have to get out of here. Can you drive?"
Etzel shook him by the shoulder until he looked up. She felt a spark of relief at the recognition in his eyes.
"Vesco, we need to go. Now!"
He nodded with renewed purpose, bending over his station while Etzel tried to calm her breath and return to her own. As gunnery sergeant, she was the Lehman Russ's second in command. Mzenwe's burden now lay upon her shoulders. He had left her in charge of a burning tank, trapped prow deep in wreckage and surrounded by foes.
"Worry what is, let the rest go," Etzel told herself, another of her mother's sayings.
She just had to clear the ravine before the fire consumed them. If they could manage that, then maybe they could bail out and escape the enemy. Somehow. Etzel grabbed her controls, only to snatch her hands back as searing heat tore up her arms. She looked at her palms. They were scorched raw. It didn't seem possible that the fire could have heated the metal of the tank's interior to such a degree without consuming her and Vesco both.
Today is the day we die. This time it was a whisper in her ear, the breath of a Geist. Etzel turned to face Vesco and saw he was shouting. His eyes bulged with fear. She tried to issue her orders, but it was as though her rebreather had melted to her flesh. She couldn't speak through its cloying mass. Blood pattered down, a carmine baptism of her short-lived command. Flames licked about Etzel, dancing over her clothes, her skin. The enemy were right outside the tank. She saw them in her mind's eye, pressed against the white-hot plasteel of the hull, flesh sizzling, fat spitting like meat on a griddle as they heaved inwards from every side. Oathkeeper gave a terrible groan, a submersible gone too deep. Etzel cast about for escape. She saw nothing but flames and smoke. She imagined the venerable tank's machine spirit straining to resist, the mass of bubbling flesh squeezing ever tighter. "I know you'll make us proud," came her mother's voice from deep within the inferno. Oathkeeper's hull gave way. Hedea Etzel screamed. She jolted awake with a grunt. One hand was halfway to the las pistol at her hip before she remembered where she was. She felt the reassuring solidity of the restraint throne into which she was belted, heard the basso roar of the Valkyrie's engines as it soared over the Mandraiga Delta. Etzel's redeployment orders were a hard knot of folded parchment stuffed into her breast pocket. She didn't need to check them to recall what they said. She'd read and reread them enough times, but they never relayed anything different, no matter what she might wish. She was to report to Mandraiga Command. She was to take command of her own tank. She was to do so effective immediately. Etzel eased back, clenching and unclenching her hands unconsciously. Her palms still tingled as though they'd just been burned, yet the layers of synth skin looked fresh and unhurt. Her seat was one of five on the rear wall of the troop bay. Five more faced it. Only a handful of thrones were occupied, by Etzel and a few other officers of the Astra Militarum. Beside them, a pair of troopers manned door guns that jutted from the Valkyrie's open flanks. Their flat coats billowed in the wind. Their helm visors glinted in the bruised light of Croatoa's sun. She tried to gauge if anyone had noticed her discomfort. Being consolidated into a Cadian regiment was daunting enough without making a poor first impression. The two gunners had their backs to her. They watched the skies and the ruins and mangrove swamps that rolled past below. One of the passengers, a Geskan judging by his neck tattoos, was snoring. The other two were awake. Etzel could see by his violet-tinged irises that one was Cadian-born. He had a shock of close-cropped white hair and a captain's insignia on his uniform. His eyes lingered on her, then flicked away in apparent disinterest. The other passenger's cyan uniform and elaborate brocade marked him as hailing from the Maes Mok Clangard. His skin and eyes were even darker than her own. Where Etzel buzz cut her hair to stubble, the Maes Mokan wore his in elaborate braids. He offered her a sympathetic smile and tapped his Vox headset. She took his meaning and keyed her own, allowing him to speak to her over the howl of the gunship's engines. "Lieutenant Horatio Aswald, Maes Mok 770th, he said, then winced. "Cadian 49th. Sorry, I'm not used to that yet. "Lieutenant Hedea Etzel," she replied. "You're consolidating too?"
"By the grace of the Emperor, I have that honour."
"You're still wearing your old uniform."
He glanced down at himself, then grinned at her. "Sentimental, I know. But I'm giving it one last outing. I have commanded three different tanks in the colours of my homeworld, and that begs a little commemoration. Let the Emperor witness me in the uniform one last time. Let him know that as a Maes Mokan, I was glorious."
Etzel chuckled despite herself. She had left her own Segoan fatigues in the barracks back at Hellbore, folded crisply despite the bloodstains that had ruined them. Presumably, they had been incinerated by now.
Her faint smile died. Something of her thoughts must have shown on her face. Aswald's expression grew serious.
Hedea Etzel, was it?
I heard about that business in Yarrow Canyon.
How did you get your tank out of that ambush?
The canyon, yes, said Etzel, grimacing as she stilled her hands mid-clench.
We fought our way out.
Aswald watched her expectantly. When she did not continue, he held up his hands.
My apologies, Lieutenant.
You can take the lad out of the family commune, but never the reverse, it seems. I am too used to everyone's business being mine, and vice versa.
But for what it is worth, I think what you did was heroic. Commander dead, squadron cut to pieces, 100 or so heretics raining death on your position, and you still got your tank out of there.
Etzel was surprised to see that spark light his eyes again. It has been a week of debriefings, Medicaid tents, prayers and miserable farewells, she said, trying to keep the bitterness from her voice. The squadron got cut to pieces, and we made it out with our tail between our legs.
You extracted a valuable war engine from an impossible situation, and scored 4 armor kills into the bargain, from what I read,
Aswald countered.
I lost Commander Mazenwe.
He was dear to you.
He was my commander, and I trusted him,
Etzel replied sharply. Aswald's expression became grave, the mask of youthful excitement set aside.
I read the after-action report on Yarrow Canyon just last night, he said.
Seeing her brows draw down, he held up a forestalling hand.
Not just you. I inloaded every file I had clearance for on the commanders of 11th Company. I am a thorough man. I like to know who I am fighting alongside.
Etzel felt a stab of concern. She had been too busy even to consider that she now had clearance to do such a thing. She realized that Aswald was still speaking.
You did well, Lieutenant Etzel, though you hardly need my validation. You have the Emperor's, and that is all any of us needs. I am glad to fight alongside you.
Etzel's hands twitched. She made a point not to inspect her tingling palms. She was saved from finding a reply by a squawk of static. A brass-chased human skull was set above the door to the cockpit, its eye sockets home to lumen bulbs and jaws stuffed with a vox grill. Etzel had assumed when she boarded that the relic was the remains of some favoured pilot.
2 minutes to Mandraiga Command,
the co-pilot's voice blared through the vox grill.
Secure and brace. Prepare for combat landing. This is a potential hot zone. The Emperor protects.
The Emperor protects, echoed Etzel automatically, making the sign of the Aquila. Aswald and the Cadian captain did likewise, and all three held on to their restraint straps as the Valkyrie's engine screamed. The aircraft banked, affording Etzel a view of fortifications and trenches amidst the marshes below. People swarmed around the site. Olive-green tents formed neat rows across what had once been an industrial lot. Armoured vehicles rumbled along a crumbling transitway raised on thick ferrocrete columns. Imperial banners flew from smokestacks above vine-choked rockcrete ruins. Duty waited for her below. She was a Cadian now. Etzel felt her chest tighten. There'd been no time to drill with her new regiment, no time for cultural reorientation or command induction. She hadn't even sworn fresh oaths, for throne's sakes.
I know you'll make us proud.
Her palms tingled. Hedea Etzel squared her shoulders and scowled in silent agreement. Act 1. Jotun. Chapter 1. The Line. The Salamander was a light-armoured vehicle, often employed for scouting purposes, or to ferry officers around hostile war zones. As with so many enduring Imperial technologies, its design leaned upon rugged simplicity. Salamanders were built for speed and resilience. They were not, reflected Etzel, made for comfort. She was crammed onto the Salamander's open-topped fighting platform, along with the tattooed Geskan, Lieutenant Aswald, three Cadian infantry officers, and all their kit bags. Adding to the press were the Salamander's commander, its gunner, and a robed Munitorum adept. He had introduced himself as Umbolt, while herding them aboard their transport back at Mandraiga Command. He had not spoken since, and clung to a grab rail with an intensity that bespoke either annoyance or fear. Aswald had made some attempts at conversation, but Etzel fended them away. She hung on, near the rear of the vehicle's troop bay, and fell back upon a calming technique Commander Mazenwe had taught his crew.
"Widen your focus," he had always said. "Observe the world around you. Anchor yourself in its details, tally patterns or colored objects. It sometimes helps. It's no bad thing to glue your eyes to your targeter, but be sure to look up at the wider battle once in a while."
Etzel started with the sky. It looked bruised today, blue and amber swirling like milk stirred into recaf. She counted five distinct rafts of cloud coiling across the heavens. They diffused the light of Croatoa's star and made it possible to look skyward without risking a poisonous glimpse of the rift. Unwilling to look long upon the void-born wound, she hastily turned her attention to the landscape. The Salamander rumbled along a raised transitway, which must once have carried macro haulers between industrial complexes. It was held high on ferrocrete pillars. Beneath, all was mud, stream and thicket. The transitway had not escaped unharmed. Lianas thicker than Etzel's forearm had grown over the road's savior rails. Plants had sunk their roots into ferrocrete, prizing it apart. She counted several blackened patches where flamer teams had burned the rapacious growth, and even the freshest bore signs of the flora of Croatoas returning with obscene vigour. Other vehicles used the roadway. Several Torux transports rumbled past, and Etzel saw the caduceus of the Medicae blazoned on them. A squadron of quad-wheeled Geskan scout bikes overtook them and roared into the distance.
"Those war quads are fine vehicles for traversing troublesome terrain," commented Aswald. "One assumes this stretch of the front will be just as troublesome as where we've come from."
Etzel grunted in response. A roadblock appeared ahead, all sandbag redoubts and emplaced heavy stubbers. Cadian soldiers manned it, alert despite the lack of obvious threats. Raised barriers allowed traffic through the blockade. Their Salamander joined a queue of vehicles being checked by a pair of guardsmen with data slates. Servo skulls buzzed overhead, playing Auspex lenses across waiting vehicles and their passengers. Speakers on fold-out legs blared prayers over the chug of their portable generatoria. The Salamander reached the front of the queue. Umbolt exchanged words with a Cadian gate guard. He tapped his data slate, she hers, then she waved them on.
"Impressive organization," Aswald said. "Keeping track of every vehicle moving along this roadway, even in an active war zone. Maintaining a data schedule for them all. Cadians do things properly."
"It isn't just data keeping they have a reputation for, Aswald," Etzel replied. She turned away and craned out over the Salamander's left track. The wind whipped around her, bringing the smells of swampland, saltwater and smoke, and underneath them a sinister sweetness she knew well. It was the smell of death borne on the winds of war. Resuming her exercise, Etzel looked down upon the swamplands. Below the nodding fronds of guassa trees were Cadian and Geskan soldiers, knee-deep in mud, slogging their way through a half-built line of flakboard trenches with arms full of supplies. Etzel grimaced. Her home planet, Sago, was a damp agri-world with high-yield protein farms clinging to ridges of land jutting into its oceans. She knew how the wet got into everything, how the mud clung, and how disease would burn through the workforce like wildfire. Etzel was perversely pleased to find that, Even after Yarrow Canyon, she still longed for the confines of a tank over the dubious freedoms of the footslogger. The salamander slowed. Etzel gripped her grab rail and adjusted the heavy kit bag on her shoulder with a grimace.
"I believe this is our exit," said Aswald.
The salamander plunged down an off-ramp, descending into more overgrown industrial ruins. As fronds and boughs whipped past, Etzel breathed deeply. She had been lulled by the rhythm of the journey, the temporary release from responsibility that came with being a passenger. Now the spell was broken. Giving up on her calming ritual, she ran through the names of her crew, muttering them to herself like a mantra. It didn't do to forget such things, and repetition was the ally of memory, as they taught in basic training.
Roos Vaslav, Gunner, Sergeant, Cadian.
Isaac Treve, Driver, Brethian.
Erika Moretzin, Loader, Cadian.
Nick Schallenbohr, Sponson Gunner, Dacturian.
Garrett Vero, Sponson Gunner, Cadian. And then there was the tank itself, steel tread, an Agamemnor pattern Lehman Russ demolisher. According to her briefing slate, the vehicle had seen centuries of warfare. Oathkeeper, by comparison, had been practically new, rolled off the forge lines barely 3 years ago. Its machine spirit had been fierce and eager. Etzel wondered what sort of spirit inhabited an ancient war engine like Steel Tread. She had worked with older tanks before. One had struck her as wise and protective, but others had tended towards bestial savagery, steeped in centuries of spilt blood. Etzel would have liked to go over the vehicle's specifications again. Many systems were unfamiliar. Crammed in as she was, though, and unsure of how soon they might stop, she didn't dare unsling her bag to rummage for her data slate. She sighed and rolled her shoulders as best she could. There were entire inloads of Cadian strategic procedures and battlefield jargon she barely had time to absorb. Etzel resigned herself to learning on the job. At least she knew her way around the inside of a tank well enough. The transitway reached ground level. It carried them on through thickets and between tidal estuaries, then abruptly into an industrial belt. Buildings soared skyward, hollowed by war. Their flanks slumped amidst vomited spills of brickwork. Empty windows stared down upon her. Pipes wider than the salamander ran alongside the roadway and formed rusting arches under which they passed. Nests of thorned vines and plants with vibrant red flower spikes grew everywhere, boiling up from within ruined buildings like guts from an opened belly. Etzel saw bullet holes and shell craters. Clouds of biting insects thrummed through the air, thick as mist. The smell of putrefaction grew stronger.
"Was not always like this," murmured Aswald. "Croatoas used to be a bustling industrial world. Tens of billions of good, emperor-fearing folk."
Etzel knew this. Even the densest soldier of the Coronal Crusade had some knowledge of the planet for which they fought.
"It was the darkness that changed things, after the rift opened," she said. "Something dreadful happened to the people, the cities."
"Not to mention the plant life, the weather, and whatever else you care to note," Aswald agreed.
"And then we came, the Coronal Crusade, here to reclaim Croatoas as the God Emperor willed."
"So the Commissariat and the priests tell us," replied Aswald, careful to keep his voice low.
Etzel glanced a sharp question his way. Aswald shrugged.
"Better to go to war in his name and thus find purpose than to sit becalmed in the void wondering where the tides of the Immaterium have hurled you and what has become of the Emperor's realm, no?
I don't need anyone to tell me why I should kill heretics," said Etzel. "Hate is reason enough."
Aswald gave her an appraising look.
"I might say, hatred and faith, one informing the other."
Now it was Etzel's turn to shrug. Either is better than fear. Their conversation was broken by thunder. She jumped and reached again for her sidearm. Those around her ducked instinctively, except Umbolt.
"Mobile Imperium artillery engaging in speculative suppression," he shouted, straining to be heard over the booms rolling from all around.
As they crossed a junction, Etzel spied a trio of basilisks, their long barrels elevated, their crews hastening to load fresh shells. The muzzle of the nearest gun spat fire, rocking the vehicle back on its treads. Then the salamander was passed and forging on towards the gap of daylight at the end of the processional.
"Is there a battle in progress?" Aswald asked. "Should we be ready for combat?"
"There are frequent attacks.
The heretics dash themselves against the Mandraiga line like wild beasts," sneered Umbolt.
"Fear not. You shan't have to fight them today."
"None of us is afraid of a fight, Quill Pusher," replied Aswald. Umbolt scowled. One corner of Etzel's mouth quirked in a half smile. The salamander left the shadow of the ruins. The transitway became a rutted dirt road. The tank banged and lurched as it passed over plasteel plates laid down, Etzel presumed, to prevent the route from being churned to a mire. Islands of foliage rose to either side amidst broad streams and a network of trenches and bunkers. Imperial Guard soldiery were everywhere, packing the trenches, running messages, or out on patrol. The salamander passed communication dugouts and mortar pits veiled by screens of flakboard and camellia line. Etzel saw towers for artillery spotters jutting proud of the marshes. Here and there squatted platforms mounting anti-aircraft cannons.
"We're close," she said to Aswald.
"Have you thought the thoughts that needed thinking?" he asked her.
The words had the cadence of a saying. She eyed him. He returned his bright and guileless smile.
"As it happens, I have, despite your chatter."
"Forgive me," he said.
"If words earned the Emperor's grace, I would be a saint by now."
"Some words do," she said.
"Rarely my chatter, Hedaya," he replied,
and Etzel snorted a laugh.
"Are those turrets ahead?" she asked, pointing.
As the shapes resolved, Aswald's smile broadened.
"I believe those are our tanks."
She saw he was right. There were Lehman Russ battle tanks of various patterns dotted amongst the trenches, painted Cadian green. On each was displayed a stylized hammer design, haloed in flame. Etzel's eye had been fooled by the redoubts of packed earth and flakboard around each vehicle. These weren't gun turrets. Rather, the tanks had been dug in so that they could serve as such.
"If they've emplaced our tanks, then the tides of war must move sluggishly here," she said.
Beyond the tanks and trenches sprawled a half-drowned no-man's land of rubble, greenery, and the remains of drowned roadways littered with wreckage. Smoke rose in the distance, tattering into the wind. Etzel thought of the basilisks and their speculative suppressing fire. She hoped those dark plumes marked fresh enemy dead. The salamander wheeled off the road and came to a halt. Its power plant cut out, leaving Etzel's ears ringing. This tinnitus slowly gave way to the sounds of the front line, murmured conversations, shouts, and barked orders, and prayer, the rumble of engines, the crackle of cook fires, and the tinny squawk of voices through vox sets. Artillery fire thumped in the distance. She smelled meat cooking and the funk of hundreds of unwashed bodies. Stronger than ever was the sweet tang of death. It crept from the swamps, and no amount of fortifications could hold it back. Umbolt flourished his data slate.
"Officers of the Astra Militarum, please confirm your belonging to the following regiments. Cadian 832nd Heavy Infantry. Cadian 49th Armoured. Geskun 43rd Light Infra..."
"No one calls us that,"
rasped the Geskun.
"What?"
"We're the Trench Runners. They're the Dauntless 832. And they're the Hammers."
"Whatever nicknames the common soldiery bandy about is of no interest to the Departamento Munitorum," sniffed Umbolt,
words as clipped as cogitator keystrokes.
You will all confirm at this time that you belong to or are being transferred to one of the regiments aforementioned.
I believe we can all confirm that, yes? Asked Aswald. There were murmurs of assent. The Gascon bristled and spat off the side of the tank. Umbolt stared expectantly.
Throne's sake, yes, snarled the Gascon.
Umbolt nodded in satisfaction and tapped at his data slate. The device chimed.
Oh, data spirit of knowledge, we offer you this day our thanks for your continued guidance and thrice-blessed auto-pedantry.
He intoned solemnly, before returning his gaze to the gathered soldiers.
This is Section 131 of the Mandraiga Defence Line,
Umbolt told them, the reverence of a moment before replaced by disdain.
You should already be fully briefed with regard to joining your assigned combat units and immediate commencement of frontline command duties. Any questions should be addressed to your platoon commanders in the first instance, or to regimental section officers in the case that such personnel are indisposed. May the Emperor bless your endeavours.
Etzel was the first to climb down from the salamander and into the connecting trench behind it. She took a few paces, enjoying the simple feeling of comparative space. She was tempted to throw her kit bag onto the duckboard floor and stretch out the knotted muscles of her back. However, she had spotted a small group of soldiers waiting nearby, watching the officers dismount. At the sight, another of Msenwe's lessons came back to her.
You can't be merely human in front of your troops. You keep that for when it is just you and the Emperor. Rest of the time, we're the strongest, the toughest, the ones who don't get tired or sad or afraid. They need it from us, and it's the only way to earn their respect.
Etzel kept her kit bag on her shoulder.
This will be our reception committee, muttered Aswald.
You're still not dressed for it, she noted.
You would prefer I had attempted to change in the back of a moving salamander?
Etzel snorted.
They will get used to me soon enough, Aswald said.
Besides, it will do these Cadians good to remember they are not the only worthy soldiers in the Imperial Guard.
Etzel smiled. Her expression curdled, however, as realization dawned on her. Soldiers saluted their new officers and, one by one, offered to lead them to their stations. All except her. Umbolt had her name on his precious data slate, so there surely couldn't be any mistake. Etzel looked around for the adept, willing to endure his impatient scorn in order to make absolutely sure she was in the right place. He had already hopped from the salamander and vanished. Etzel grimaced. She'd find no aid there. She had expected Sergeant Vaslev to meet her, had counted on a few minutes alone with him to get oriented before she met the rest of the crew. From the scant notes on her data slate, Etzel knew him to be a veteran Cadian who had fought for his world long before it was destroyed. He didn't seem the sort to be late. Etzel scanned around until she spotted rust turrets jutting above the trenches. She frowned and squared her shoulders, willing away tiredness, hunger, and travel-sore aches. If Vaslev was delayed, Etzel wasn't about to wait around for him. She would just have to find her tank the hard way.
No sign of your gunner? Asked Aswald.
Etzel started, realizing that he must have noted her predicament and lingered. His own second-in-command stood to one side, wearing a guarded expression.
Sergeant, do you know where I can find Steel Tread?
Aswald's gunner cleared her throat.
Absolutely, sir. Follow the trench that way along the back of this section. She's the last tank before the lookout tower. If you pass that, you're into 132 and you've gone too far. Oh, and keep your head down, sir. Snipers, you know.
Thank you, Sergeant, Etzel said. She spared a glance for Aswald, whose eyebrows were raised, then turned and set off along the trench. She did as the sergeant suggested, staying low between the flakboard walls. She was still several hundred yards back from no man's land here, but complacency was dangerous. The enemy could be out there, sights ghosting across the front lines, seeking targets worth a bullet. "I'm not getting shot before I find out what in the Emperor's name is going on here," she thought. There was a chance she was about to walk into a crisis and be expected to aid people she had never met. And if there was no crisis, Etzel wasn't sure if it would be better or worse. Tank crews spent countless hours crammed into a confined space together. They relied upon one another for survival just as much as their machines. If one of the crew failed in their duties, all suffered. The thought that her new crew might be this unreliable from the off was not encouraging. Etzel passed artillery positions, then a side trench, in which several wounded Cadians lay on stretchers, then another where a slight and wiry man in a tanker's uniform led a group of soldiers in prayer. The man looked up at her as she passed. Ice-blue eyes pierced her from under his wild black brows. It seemed they were not the first non-natives consolidated into this Cadian regiment. She would not be alone. Etzel was spattered with mud by the time she found Steel Tread. She knew the vehicle even from a distance. The demolisher's blocky silhouette and squat cannon were unmistakable. As she got closer, the tank's name resolved in curling low Gothic letters stenciled along the turret's side. Next to it, someone with passable artistic talent had painted a horned helmet being crushed under a steel-shod boot. Someone sat atop the tank, rendered in silhouette. Clearly the risk of snipers had been overstated, or this person had a death wish. She saw it was a woman, heavily muscled, and with her tank suit undone to her waist to reveal the olive vest below. Her right arm was a bulky mechanical augmetic. Her blonde hair was shaved short, and her eyes glinted violet as she glanced Etzel's way. Recognition passed over the woman's face. She wrapped her mechanical fist against the hull, then slid off the tank and out of sight. Etzel rounded the corner and marched up the short ramp connecting the trench to the tank's emplacement. There was enough space between the makeshift ramparts and the tank itself to form a walled-off enclosure with Steel Tread at its heart. Despite herself, Etzel felt a moment's pride at the sight of the demolisher, her demolisher. The vehicle looked well-maintained. Its exterior stowage appeared in good order. Steel Tread was bulkier than Oathkeeper had been, with thicker armour and more firepower. Sponson-mounted heavy bolters offered anti-infantry point defence. A tank-busting las cannon juttered from the vehicle's prow, while a pintle-mounted storm bolter on its turret sat above the Russ's main weapon. The fearsome demolisher cannon's menace was somewhat undercut by the wire of drying laundry strung between a grab handle on the hull and a nearby lumen pole. Two of the tank's crew were rising from fold-out stools either side of a table improvised from a munitions crate. Across it was scattered the paraphernalia of a card game. One was male, Cadian by his eyes, and with youthful features, dark skin, and a close-cropped beard. The other was a woman, also young to Etzel's eyes. Her skin was a shade lighter than her companion's, and her eyes were so dark they looked almost black. Her hair was longer than regulation, with metal beads braided into it, and her nose and ears were both pierced multiple times. Tattoos forested her knuckles and forearms. A stylized teardrop marked the skin beneath her right eye. Both tankers stood to attention, and Etzel was immediately struck by the hostility in the woman's glare. The crewman with the augmetic arm ambled around the tank to join them at attention. To the vehicle's other side, Etzel saw an older man with a sergeant's insignia pulling himself to his feet, her errant gunner still in the process of waking up. Vaslav dragged one hand over his narrow face as though to scrape away a rime of exhaustion. He was pale and scarred, with a shaved head and a pencil moustache. His violet eyes had bags beneath them. He wore an expression of thinly veiled annoyance. Etzel took her time with the last few steps of her approach, giving herself a moment to consider what she was going to do. She could play the hard disciplinarian and shock them into shape, or the confident commander, ignoring the troubling details. She knew what Masenwe would have done. For that matter, she knew what she would do. First impressions mattered.
"I am Hedea Etzel, your new commander," she said.
Dropping her kit bag to free both hands, she made the sign of the Aquila. Her crew returned the salute, though she noted the glaring woman's Aquila was just sloppy enough to be disrespectful. Etzel kept her gaze level and let the silence stretch. It had grown uncomfortable by the time Vaslav cleared his throat.
"Welcome to Steel Tread, sir. I'm Sergeant Vaslav, your gunner."
He gestured to each of the others as he introduced them.
"Loader Erika Moretzen," he said.
The big woman saluted smartly.
"Sponson Gunner Garrett Vero."
The young man's salute was also crisp and accompanied by a respectful,
"Sir, it's a pleasure, sir."
"And you are Sponson Gunner Nick Schallenbohr, yes?" asked Etzel. The woman with the gang tattoos wore an insouciant grin.
"Yeah,"
she replied, and Etzel fancied she saw a challenging glint in the gunner's eye. "My briefing did not suggest we were a stationary unit, Sergeant," said Etzel. Vaslav looked nonplussed.
"Stationary, sir?"
"We have a driver?"
prompted Etzel.
"Ah,"
said Vaslav, glancing about as though only just realizing there was a crewman missing.
"Driver Treve is leading prayers in a nearby trench, sir. Faith is our first weapon against the arch-enemy, after all."
Etzel said nothing.
"I told Treve to return in time for your arrival, but..."
Vaslav continued, letting out a breath.
"But, well... he's proper pious, him," sneered Schallenbohr. "Speak when spoken to, Schallenbohr," snapped Vaslav.
"Yes, boss.
I was given to understand the discipline of Cadian regiments is second to none," Etzel said. "Instead, I find nobody waiting to meet me at my drop-off point, and now you tell me my driver is absent without my leave. I find myself underwhelmed." There was something sullen in Vaslav's continued silence.
"Yeah, so if..."
"Commander," said Vero, cutting Schallenbohr off, "would you like to inspect Steel Tread? I can see to your belongings."
"That would be good," said Etzel, replying to Vero but keeping her eyes on Schallenbohr. The young woman stared back. "Local orientation would also help," she said as Vero hefted her kit bag with a wince.
"Commissary, section command post, latrines, all that."
"Of course, sir," began Vaslav. Then his gaze slid over her shoulder and set hard.
Etzel turned. The man from the side trench, with the sharp blue eyes, was walking up the ramp.
"Leading prayers. Isaac Treve, I presume."
Treve was, at least, better presented than his crewmates. His tank suit was crisp, his stride purposeful. Somehow, he had contrived to keep the mud off himself almost entirely. He held a prayer book in one hand and wore a machine-stamped aquila on a chain around his neck. His expression was unconcerned, bordering on smug. Etzel was struck by the sudden thought that Treve's absence had been deliberate, that the man had engineered some distance between himself and his crewmates. Treve stood to attention and offered a sharp aquila salute.
"Commander Etzel, it is a privilege."
"Is it?
A pity, then, that you were not present when I arrived as you should have been."
"Of course, sir. My apologies."
Treve smiled, seemingly perversely pleased with the rebuke.
"I was detained by the divine spirit of the God Emperor, for he moved me to a surfeit of piety that ran over long. I'm sure you understand, sir. When he speaks to us, his will supersedes all others."
Etzel shook her head.
"What I understand, Driver Treve, is that when my crew musters, I expect you to be present and punctual. If you must make your peace with the God Emperor afterwards, then he will have to be understanding.
I stand between you and him in the chain of command.
At this borderline blasphemy, Treve looked as though he'd taken a mouthful of something rotten. A flush crept up his neck. Etzel heard a sound behind her that might have been Shalimbor stifling a snort. She swung around to see an expression that was half guilty, half amused, on the sponson gunner's face. Vero still clutched her kit bag, expression pained. Etzel looked to Vaslav. He was her second in command. He knew these soldiers far better than she. A good gunnery sergeant dealt with day-to-day discipline so that their commander could rise above such things as a figure of authority and respect. Vaslav just stared into the middle distance, hands clasped tightly behind his back, expression carefully unreadable. "Let me be perfectly clear," she said, raking them with her gaze. "This has not gone well. I'm going to inspect Steel Tread, then get some food, and once I have..." A loud clearing of the throat caused Etzel to wheel about. Acadian soldier stood at the bottom of the ramp, 9th Army Group Command insignia on her shoulder. She held a data slate and had her helmet tucked under one arm.
"What?" barked Etzel.
"Apologies, Lieutenant Commander. Captain Brezhik requests your presence for a strategic briefing at Mandraga Command."
Etzel felt her shoulders sag. Tiredness, hunger, frustration, and a painful longing for her old crewmates threatened to crack her composure. Instead, she took a deep breath, and then the proffered data slate. It told her little more than the messenger.
"I have just come from Mandraga Command," Etzel bit out. "I am engaged in inspecting my new tank and crew."
"With respect, Lieutenant Commander, the captain was unambiguous."
"Of course," Etzel replied with a hard smile. She had been a soldier long enough to recognize a stress test.
"Vero, get my belongings stowed," she told the sponson gunner. "The rest of you be ready for full inspection upon my return, and no more excursions."
She directed this to Treve, before turning and following the messenger back up the trench.
Chapter 2. First Impressions. Garrett Vero watched his new commander vanish around the corner, then let out a breath. Despite the events of the last few minutes, he felt a slow welling of relief. There were officers who would have invoked the commissariat for what Commander Etzel had just witnessed. "At least she's not a petty tyrant," he thought.
"You were supposed to wake me at 13:30, snapped Sergeant Vaslav.
Vero's relief was replaced by guilt. For all he knew, the sergeant was still going to catch it in the neck when Commander Etzel returned.
"I'm sorry, sir," he said.
"Lost track of time, boss,"
Shalimbor added, entirely unapologetic. When Shalimbor had first joined the crew, she had told Vero that her early years had been spent as an underhive gangfighter on Dacturia, then later as a militia conscript hurled in as cannon fodder. She asserted that she had survived as much as any Cadian, and lost as much too, by the time her regiment's few survivors were absorbed into the coronal crusade. Vaslav turned his glare on their scattered card game.
"I can see how that could have happened. Vero, you at least should know Cadians don't gamble."
"Just a friendly game, sir. No stakes but honour," said Vero, glad now that he had taught Shalimbor out of placing wagers.
Vero respected Vaslav, but when one of his dark moods took him, the sergeant could turn nasty. He'd been worse since Commander Holtz died. Or perhaps it was simply the months mired in salty ditch water that had worn down Vaslav's nerves. The sergeant spared a last glare for the scattered cards, then turned his scowl to Moretzin. The loader wore an expression as placid as the still waters of Acadian moorland tarn. She held up her bare wrist.
"No chrono, sir," she said. "Smashed, remember? You were requisitioning me a new one."
Vaslav's scowl deepened. He dragged his palm over his face again. It was a gesture Vero had come to know and dislike these past months. It made the sergeant look harassed, somehow, and terribly tired. Evidently considering the exchange done with, Shalimbor prodded Vero in the ribs.
"Come on then, what's in the hold all?"
Where you're holding it, I reckon she's packed it with rocks.
Are you mad? Vero asked.
Not nicking, am I? Schallenborg grinned. Just want to get a look-see, yeah? Can tell a lot about someone from their stash.
You are not going to rummage through the commander's bloody kit bag, hissed Vero.
Duct squirmer, she shot at him, snatching for the hold all.
Thrawn's sakes, Nix, I'm serious.
Schallenborg, growled Vaslav.
Boss,
she said, subsiding with another mischievous smile. Vero rolled his eyes. Treve had hastened forward, evidently intending to intercede should Schallenborg get hold of the bag. Now he stepped back with a scowl.
You know that no other crew in this company behaves with such a lamentable lack of discipline, yes?
Treve made no effort to keep the disgust from his voice. When I learned that I was to be consolidated into a Cadian regiment, I was glad. How I must have displeased the God Emperor, then, to be saddled with this.
Schallenborg rounded on the driver.
Why don't you pray to him for a transfer, yeah? She sneered.
My prayers are occupied with appeals that he might instill in you a sense of duty and civility, replied Treves stiffly. But then, one wonders if some miracles are beyond even him.
Worry less about my soul and more about steel treads, Schallenborg shot back.
Driver's job, right?
Or you going to let our Garrett do your work for you again?
Treve bridled. Vero sighed.
He had always had an inquiring mind. And as a child in Khazravark, he had loitered around the repair shrines when not at study or drill practice. Vero had picked up all manner of useful titbits in those days. Since becoming a tanker in the wake of Cadia's fall, he had only added to his knowledge. Commander Holtz had joked that Vero might have been a tech priest in another life, with the way he was able to soothe the machine spirit of steel tread.
Treve, by comparison, took a hostile view of what he called meddling in Martian apocrypha.
Vero thought it more likely that the driver didn't want to admit a humble sponson gunner had more of a way with their tank than he did.
Enough, Nix, Vero snapped. Haven't you done enough damage already today?
What are you chatting about? She asked.
You've already angered Commander Etzel, and she's not even stepped inside the tank, he exclaimed.
Schallenborg responded with a three-fingered Dacturian gesture that Vero knew was the equivalent of a shrug.
She's got proving to do yet. Ain't Holtz, you know.
God Emperor rest him, said Vaslav. Vero looked between them uncomfortably. Brenner Holtz had been an officer worth fighting for in his glory days, but when Cadia broke, so did he. The old man had become erratic since the beginning of the Croatoan campaign, veering between needless risks and virtual torpor. Moreover, Vaslav might have covered for him, but Vero knew Holtz had become increasingly fond of the bottle. Holtz's reputation, coupled with Vaslav's excuses, had kept consequences at bay. But stagnation on the Mandraiga line had done the old man no good. The official story was that Holtz had been shot by an enemy sniper as he moved from one trench to another. Rumours persisted.
Treve's not wrong, said Vero. Commander Etzel is in charge now, and we've a reputation for discipline to uphold.
The sergeant's expression soured again.
Being Cadian means more than obedience and faith, White Shield, he snapped.
Vero considered reminding the sergeant for the 100th time that he hadn't been a White Shield since Cadia's fall, then discarded the idea. It was not a trench worth dying in, as the saying went.
Being Cadian means knowing the right cause and the right officer, Vaslav continued.
Sir, said Vero. Unsure how else to respond.
It's realism, pragmatism, recognizing value. It's knowing the Emperor only forgives those who earn his forgiveness.
Sir, Vero repeated, aware now that he'd hit a nerve.
Treve snorted. The God Emperor sends his servants suffering and pain that we might prove our worthiness through glad endurance. So we teach on Brethia.
If the Cadians were all they claimed to be, they would bear their hurts more gladly.
The driver strode away towards Steel Tread without waiting for Vaslav to dismiss him. Vero looked to the sergeant, but Vaslav only glanced away, his expression brooding. Frustrated, Vero called after Treve.
Our planet broke beneath us, and still we stayed true. Watch your tone talking about things you don't understand, Isaac.
Acting as though he hadn't heard, Treve clambered up the flank of the demolisher and vanished into a hatch. Vero unclenched his teeth. He realized he was still clutching Commander Etzel's bag. A hand landed on his shoulder. He found Shallenbor looking at him with genuine concern. The rough-edged humor was gone.
Mate, you're proper shut down today, aren't you?
Vero almost laughed.
We're on the front line of a war zone fighting degenerate heretics with no sign of reinforcement or hope. Our old commander's dead, and now our new one thinks we're a bunch of ill-disciplined rejects. Frankly, I'm not sure how far off her assessment is. And that's without even mentioning.
He shot a quick look upwards, unwilling to name the rift out loud.
Aren't you shut down?
Vero realized he was gesticulating with one hand and brandishing the commander's bag with the other. Alarmed, he set it down in case he made matters worse by breaking Etzel's belongings.
Listen, we're a crew in all the ways that matter, yeah?
Shallenbor assured him.
Don't matter if we're Cadian or Dactorian or whatever she is. She is Segoan, which bears no comparison to being a Cadian, grumbled Vaslav.
Shallenbor scowled, but before she and the sergeant could lay into one another again, Moretzin cleared her throat.
Go on,
she said, rolling her augmetic shoulder with a whine of servos.
Take a guess.
Vero shot her a grateful smile.
Moretzin, we were ordered to make ready for inspection, said the sergeant. We don't have time for guessing games.
Commander will be gone a while yet, said Moretzin, leaning back against Steel Tread with her arms folded.
The augmetic whined and clicked, glinting in the wan daylight. Vero knew it coupled with cybernetic bracing that ran through Moretzin's shoulder and into her spine. He knew that it helped the loader heft massive demolisher shells as efficiently as any carousel mechanism, and that he'd seen senior officers with lower grade augmetics. What neither he nor the rest of the crew knew was why Moretzin had such an incredible augmetic limb.
Pirates, said Shallenbor. Our Erica took up with pirates, yeah? First mate, wasn't she? Had that arm done so she could teach them all to respect her captain's authority.
Moretzin laughed softly and shook her head. Vero was surprised to see even the sergeant crack a smile.
Well, that can't be right, Shallenbor. Otherwise, she'd have used it on you.
Not likely, boss, the gunner scoffed. But I ain't arm-wrestling her again any time soon.
All right, I think,
began Vero, but he was interrupted by the rising howl of a klaxon. Adrenaline shot through him. Air raid? Attack? They all looked to Vaslav. The sergeant held up a hand, gesturing, wait. As the klaxon's blare died, hubbub from all around spilled in to replace it. Vero heard shouted orders and booted feet beating against duckboards.
General call to arms, barked Vaslav. You know the drill.
Vero took several steps towards the tank before remembering Commander Etzel's bag. He hastened back and heaved it onto his shoulder, already mentally plotting where he would stow her possessions for the commander's convenience. Shallenbor gathered up their cards and canteens. Moretzin easily hefted the crate back into its waiting stack, then began an inventory of the spare fuel barrels and cans lashed in the demolisher's outer stowage.
Sergeant, we're still two barrels down, she called to Vaslav. How many times do I need to chase them about this? He groaned. So noted, Moretzin. I'll procure them from reserves next time I see a Munitorum adept. Even if I have to shake him warmly by the throat.
Thank you, sir, said Moretzin, saluting.
She vanished into Steel Tread. None of them had said it out loud, but Vero suspected they were all wondering the same thing. After months of waiting, defense, attrition, the indignity of steel tread becoming a motionless gun emplacement, were they finally going on the offensive? Shedding the question, he set about stowing his new commander's gear. He rapped on one of the side hatches set into steel tread's armored flank. The hatch gave a muffled clank as its locking bolt was released from inside, then swung open. He clambered through, reassured as always by the tight confines and armored bulk of the tank. The interior was standard for a Lehman Russ demolisher of this pattern. Commander's bucket seat up at turret level, benefiting from several vid screens and with a